B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
Where, and he apologizes to our listening audience right there.
That's cool. All right. Well, we'll hear from him in August then.
610-632-0975, 610-632-09. No, he just got the new phone last August.
Oh, I thought, okay. So he's getting a new one pretty soon?
I don't know anyone plans ahead that much. Well, actually, no, but people know about the iPhone.
My wife, she's, oh, no, you're not up for another 6 months, so I don't care if it doesn't work.
Does it even matter? Is a free upgrade even a thing?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't
pay attention to that stuff at all.
610-632-0975. You're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic, WPN, Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studio, only from Comcast, 8 o'clock hour, brought to you by Martin Law, the law firm for injured workers. Visit paworkinjury.com. A lot of questions surrounding the Eagles right now, especially with the wide receiving core. The wide receivers coach, Carson Walsh, says that Matt Collins grades out when you look at pluses. When you look at his grade, it's pluses across the board. Well, I think most people in the fan base would agree that you need a lot more from your wide receiving group going forward if they're going to make any kind of noise this year. On the line with us right now, from The Athletic, our good friend Zach Berman joins us. Good morning, Zach.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, man. Always a pleasure. It was a confusing thing. I don't know if you were down there at the NovaCare Complex yesterday. Carson Walsh, the wide receivers coach, addressing the media, saying that Matt Collins has graded out with pluses. What are they not asking him to do as much as other receivers? And if he's grading out to be that good, why haven't we seen more, production from him when it comes to the major statistical categories?
Yes. Yeah, so I was there. I was speaking with him. And so the context there was that earlier on when he was asked about Matt Collins, he said that we, as in reporters, keep bringing up the word production, and he doesn't view production simply as catching the ball. He thinks every player has a role. And so then I followed up a little later on saying, well, how should production be viewed? You know, if it's not with the way we always thought of production, catches, receiving yards, touchdowns, what's the way to look at it? And he was saying that in Matt Collins's case, he lines up the right way. He performs his assignments, and he plays with great effort. And he said that's why Matt Collins, and this is a direct quote, is one of our top graders every week.
Uh-huh.
I don't think Carson was going to get up there and kill his receivers publicly. But I thought the approach he was going to take was saying that Matt Collins is pretty low on the progression. And if it's getting to him, it means that, you know, that it should be going somewhere else. So I was surprised by the approach that he took there. I kind of perceived it as him defending his wide receiver. But clearly, the Eagles went into the bye 32nd in the league of 32 teams in yards per target, 31 in the league in yards per reception, 30th in yards after the catch. This is the receiving group overall. So they are underperforming, and they need to play better. And I don't think there's any way to rationalize that.
Obviously, Zach, we know in this city, and a lot of fans, they know the game, and you know that. You write for these people. It's almost demeaning to say that he's doing the bare minimum. And I know he's trying to defend him, but you just listed off those numbers, which are just astounding how bad it's been. It shouldn't be that hard to make an impact as a wide receiver on this team when it seems like the talent level is so close together, not unlike their cornerback position. Nobody's great. Nobody's god-awful. You should be able to make some kind of impact here.
Sure. Now, in the case of Matt Collins, I don't think he's the problem per se. It's more the lack of production relative to what you're expecting from Alshon Jeffrey and Nelson Agholor. The reason Matt Collins has been on the field in those three receiver sets and 11 personnel is because they want to play that way to kind of expand the playbook. If you're in two tight end sets all the time, your offense is somewhat limited. But you need to look at the roster construction too. The fact that everything was banking on, you know, a 32, 33 year old wide receiver who has injury history. And so what was the backup plan there? So I think that when the Matt Collins discussion comes up, you really need to look at the roster construction, the way they assembled this wide receiver group, and then why aren't they getting more production from the other players? Because I don't think the Eagles went into the season with expectations that Mac Collins was going to be like a major wide receiver contributor.
Oh, especially not with having DeSean Jackson come back, obviously. But yeah. And then also adding J.J. Arcega-Whiteside in the second round of this past draft. So I want to ask you this. We're now talking about a team that's tied for the top spot in the division, and we got to see how the tiebreak works out by the end of the season with them and the Cowboys. But we're grasping at straws to almost say why this team could win the division when we started the season by saying this team should be a Super Bowl contender. In your mind, what's one of the top reasons this Eagles team is not that good this year?
Yeah, so we just spoke about wide receivers, but I would really look at the loss of Malik Jackson, which I think is more significant than the loss of DeSean Jackson. When you lose your biggest offseason acquisition in the first game of the season, I think that changed the way they viewed the defensive line, and that affected their pass rush, especially early on in the season. Now, injuries are the reality of the NFL. Players are going to go down, but he was so central to the defensive plan. I frankly don't think that there's as much doom and gloom with this team as others might think. I mean, I thought they would be 6-3 at the bye, not 5-4, so they're not really that far from where I thought. Everything's wide open in front of them. I just thought they would have a more prolific offense than what they've had. And so when you look at the offensive regression, in my opinion, it's not getting the production you thought from Alshon Jeffrey and Nelson Agholor. And when you look at the yards per catch and the yards per target in those cases, that needs to improve.
So, Zach, that leads exactly to my question. Do you see any kind of major overhaul with this offense and the way they go about it in this so-called second half of the season? If Doug Peterson does one thing well, it's adjustments at halftime. Well, this is halftime of the season. Do you see him making major adjustments to this offense?
Yes, I do see him making adjustments. In particular, I you already saw them play two tight end sets. It's almost a based offense, and I think that's going to be the way it is going forward. I think that you're going to, with the addition of Jordan Matthews, you're going to have him on the field more in three receiver sets. Jordan, for whatever criticism he might endure, I think he's a reliable wide receiver, and he's been productive on this team for a 5-year period, essentially. So I think that just the personnel is going to be different when they're in three receiver sets, and I think they're going to focus more on Ertz, Goddard. They're going to rely on their running game. They're not going to be the same downfield team, obviously, that they thought they were going to be going into the year. But I think the certainty of DeSean Jackson being out for the season, as opposed to kind of this week-to-week uncertainty, I think that's going to at least help in terms of the planning going forward. So I think the fact that they know it, they can make adjustments for it. And I do think the offense is going to look different personnel-wise.
Zach, let's build on that, and let's look at Carson Wentz. Do you see them at all, maybe, and I've asked other people also, but taking the cover off him a little bit? Have 9 games convinced them that he's okay, that he's healthy enough, that maybe you can roll him out? Maybe you can use his athleticism a little bit more?
Yes. I think they should. I don't think the injury or health has been the reason why he hasn't done it. I do think Carson's kind of tried to adjust the way he's played, but he is best when he's improvising, and I think he's shown that this year. I don't think the team is worried about rolling him out, and I do think they're going to do it, but I don't think, they're not going to come out with the Baltimore Ravens offense. But I do expect them to really accentuate what Carson does, and he's their franchise quarterback. And I said this when DeSean went down, that even though that's a big loss, if you feel like you have a franchise quarterback and the top of the league offensive coach, you need to figure it out. You can't just blame the absence of DeSean Jackson for what's going on with this offense.
Where are we right now when it comes to JP, if he's coming back, coming out of the bye week?
Yeah, so they when Peters comes back, they're going to put him back at left tackle. They've made that clear. I think, though, they're going to make sure Peters is absolutely ready to go, and I don't think there's anything definitive there yet, but they really like the way Dillard's playing. I spoke to Jeff Stoutland yesterday. They really see the progress from him, and I think that unless Peters is absolutely ready to get in there, you're going to see Dillard.
Okay.
Speaking with Zach Berman from The Athletic, you spoke to Jeff Stoutland. I was reading some of the quotes yesterday from you and from Stoutland. He just said nothing, as you would expect, nothing but glowing things to say about Brandon Brooks, who got upgraded or really rewarded with that four-year contract extension yesterday.
Yeah, and look, it was merited. Now, there is some projection or some risk on the team side because, Brandon, you know, you're signing him basically 4 years, 12, 13 here in his career, so you need to trust at the age curve. But that's a bet I would make on a player like that. He's done nothing but exceeded expectations since he's been in Philly, from 2016 when he overcame the anxiety condition to this past year when he overcame the torn Achilles tendon. Hasn't missed a start since the 2016 season. Has been a top of the league guard. I think that's a position that ages better than a skill spot, so I'm not so worried about paying him there. Then the other thing that you need to look at is that the going rate for blue chip players, that's not going to stagnate anytime soon. So if you feel like you were going to have to pay him in the next 15 months, it's better to do it sooner than later.
Absolutely. Now, Zach, just look into the crystal ball a little bit here. It's only Tuesday, but I want to look at Sunday with you and then the rest of the season. How do you think the Eagles fare against the Patriots this weekend? And then the rest of the year, at this point, do you see them going in the direction of actually winning the division?
Well, so in terms of this week, I would lean toward the Patriots. I just think the Patriots have done more this year, also coming off a bye. I think the Eagles have matched up well against them. Obviously, you saw the Super Bowl, but the key is going to be, can the Eagles get pressure on Tom Brady? And if that pass rush is playing well, the Eagles are going to have a shot. But that's a really tough defense this year, and the Eagles are going to need to run the ball well, in my opinion, there. As far as the season, I think this is going to come down to Week 16. Week 16 is going to be a championship game. It's going to be an NFC East championship game. And I would tell Eagles fans, don't worry so much about the Patriots and Seahawks games. Worry about the four winnable games left, and then the four games they should win, and then the Cowboys game. If they take care of business in those four games, so the Giants twice, Washington and Miami, and they beat the Cowboys at home, they'll be in the playoffs. The key is beating the Cowboys at home. I think they can. I don't think one team is significantly better than the other, but I think that's the game that's really going to determine whether there's January football in Philadelphia.
Good enough. Zach Berman from The Athletic. Always great talking to you, man. Thanks for coming on with us.
Anytime. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Zach Berman from The Athletic. 610-632-0975. Coming up, we'll dissect the Atlanta Gentlemen's Clubs a little bit further. Okay. But here's what else we'll do. Matt Klentak joined us last week. He joined us on Friday. Now, GM meetings are going to be getting underway. You look at what the Phillies really need on this team. Matt, I'll give him credit. He acknowledged that there's a lot of holes to fill on this team. But if you're thinking along the lines of those big-name free agents like Gerrit Cole, start examining other options. Because Matt Klentak didn't give me any confidence that the Phillies are going to be those big spenders. I think they're going to re-sign JT Realmuto. I think they have to. I think Matt Klentak knows that. But when it comes to the big names...
Yeah. $300 million. I think I'm good.
Yeah, option C.
Yeah, right. I almost get it done for you.
We'll examine. He makes it move. We'll let you know in a second what Matt Klentak had to say about that. Time of the Fanatic 812.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5, The Fanatic.
So coming up in about 2 minutes, we'll let you hear from Matt Klentak when we talked to him on Friday. Didn't inspire a lot of confidence going forward about what the Phillies are going to do this offseason. If you want them to make that big splash like they did last year with Bryce Harper, look in another direction. Dustin's been holding in Willow Grove. What's up, Dustin?
Dude, Klentak needs a muzzle on, dude. He doesn't even need to talk.
No.
Hear that guy.
No, I got to hear him talk, man. I need the insight into the mindset of a guy like that.
I want the big dog to talk.
Oh, John Middleton?
Yeah.
Yeah,
no.
I, No, don't get me wrong. Dustin, don't get me wrong. I really like John Middleton. The last time he addressed the media, I think he made the wise decision to not be up there when they hired Joe Girardi, because I will say this. Klentak, Middleton, and McPhail, when all three of them addressed the media at the end of the season when they talked about moving on from Gabe Kapler, that wasn't a good showing by the Phillies brass. So it was best that it was just Klentak and Girardi, and I always appreciate whenever Matt Klentak can come on with us. I think he did give us some insight into the offseason.
I think Girardi and Klentak have already butted heads. That's my opinion. I already think it's happened.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Let's move on to more important things. We got Birds Pats this weekend, fellas.
Pats, baby.
I'll tell you what, man. I want weather like today, Sunday. The crappier the weather, the better chance we got in this game. That's what I'm going with. I don't care. I'll be there. I don't care about the weather. I honestly think I'm scared about Doug. I think he's going to try and get, he's going to try and get cute with the offense. We need to ground and pound the ball. That's what makes his team, like, run. Running the ball is what makes his team run. Does that make sense, or does that sound stupid?
No, that's how they have success. Even if it's not running, Dustin, even if it's not running the ball, the screen game, that's worked tremendously.
That's one of the games in Doug's eyes, but it counts. I get it. He needs to do it more. So I honestly think the defense is getting their things together. They had a couple kinks here and there. I really think that they're going to come out firing this weekend. And once again, it's going to come into the offensive hands and see what 11 does with it. But more important things, you guys are talking about the gentleman's clause with the Harden situation. There's no doubt that dude's balling when he's in Atlanta. There is no doubt about that.
Yeah,
that is a completely different animal. See, now, if there was a basketball team in Buffalo, he ain't doing nothing. He's going to lose every time he goes to Buffalo. Now, in Miami, the Bellows, Cabaret and Bellows in Miami?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's going to drop 50 after every night being in that place. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, yeah.
And the MJ story is classic. I wish I could get Tiger Woods and Michael Jordan on a two-hour show just talking crap to people and what they've done in their career. Because in my opinion, those two are the greatest ish talkers ever in the sports. And you know what? It would be priceless. Priceless material.
Yeah, that's must.
Have a good week, man.
You too. But Dustin, go Birds, man. Thanks for the call.
I've heard, just on that last note, Tiger Woods on the Dan Patrick show before, and they were kind of like joking around about like what they gamble during like their free time golf.
Uh-huh.
And Tiger goes, well, Dan, just come out with me one time and we'll play. and Dan goes, oh, yeah, like, what are we playing for? And Tiger just goes, whatever makes you uncomfortable. And I was like, damn.
Yeah, when you got money like that, and you're like, whatever,
Whatever makes you uncomfortable.
Whatever makes you feel like, dang, boy, I better make this show.
And I was like, that is a cold answer.
Yeah, I know somebody in the media that had an opportunity to golf with Jordan.
Wow.
Rick Tockett.
Wow.
Which you wouldn't think.
He likes his wagers.
He likes to roll the dice.
Yes. All right,
let's just say that.
And take them, too.
And I'm forgetting.
Oh, by the
way. One other guy, he's not in the sports business. He's just a businessman. He does very well for himself. And he was like, no.
Yeah, no, I'm not doing that. I'll be homeless.
And they're like, why wouldn't you want to golf with those people? And it's like, because I don't have $10,000 to wager on who's
on a par three, closest to the pin.
Yeah, or like longest drive on a given hole. Like, I don't have that money. Like, it sounds, I'll go.
Yeah, it sounds great. And then MJ's like, oh, yeah, let's do 15K closest to the pin here. What?
I'll caddy for you.
And then here you go, shank.
Yeah.
Could you
imagine?
I've heard this about Jordan, and I hope it's not true, but I've heard Jordan will ask his caddy if they want to be paid or if they want an autograph.
I've heard that also.
Really? You've heard that too?
Yeah.
All right. That's true then. We know it's true. No, but I'm serious. I've heard that before.
But if you're the caddy and you know you're caddying for him, if you bring in a pair of, let's say, Jordan 3s and a authentic jersey, you could probably sell that stuff on the open market autograph for, $1,500.
Well, you better, because the club's firing you right after that.
Well, not unless
that's
the
tip.
Yeah, in this case, it's not the tip, it's the payment.
Yeah.
And then it keeps him from, you sitting up there jabbing about his career.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, do you want to get paid or do you want an autograph? So go do your thing.
Read this putt for me, clown.
Don't sit up here and talk to me about Rodman and what I was doing against Magic, and I don't want to hear all that. Read this putt.
Yeah, I think caddies, especially the places Jordan's going to, are well taught. I would go out there.
Yeah.
I would assume, assume that.
But you know, just, I mean, anybody that sits out there and you meet someone like that, you're going to want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would assume. 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. So Matt Klentak was on with us. By the way, 9 o'clock today, we'll be joined by Alain Vigneault, the head coach of the Flyers.
Phenomenal week for the Flyers last week.
Yeah, 4-game winning streak. They've won 5 of 6. They have a 6-game point streak.
They're fun. They are fun.
TK is a lot of fun.
Bob's crushing on him so hard.
You have a bromance.
Oh, my God. I might get a jersey. I might ask for a jersey for Christmas.
From Donna?
Yeah.
Donna.
Well, right now, my car.
Donna been cooking lately?
That's all she does.
She's been baking.
Cooking and baking. Baking
in the oven. Nice and steamy.
I come home to different aromas every day.
There you go.
Wow, wow, what the hell?
She's got weird. Trey knows.
Oh. anyway, Alain Vigneault will join us at 9 o'clock. And hey, maybe we'll just join. Well, I don't know. Maybe we'll ask him about this fun stuff. But nonetheless, Matt Klentak, Philly's general manager, was on with us on Friday. And I know a lot of people are going to be looking at the GM meetings. They'll be looking at the winter meetings and all that fun stuff around the corner. And GM meetings, actually, you're starting up this week.
Yeah.
Today, as a matter of fact.
Arizona?
Always in Arizona.
Yeah, yeah. Well, sometimes they do Florida, I think.
Yeah, never mind. But anyway, they're starting up this week, and I know a lot of people are going to be looking at what this team will do in terms of making a big splash in free agency. And Gerrit Cole's name has come up. Anthony Rendon's name has come up and all that. The Rendon deal, as much as I'd like, I'd love to have Rendon here. And if you're blank checking it, yeah, let's party. Same thing with Gerrit Cole. But that's not going to be the reality, I think, of this Phillies offseason. And when we asked Matt Klentak about that on Friday, this is kind of why I'm feeling they're going to look in other directions besides those big-name free agents. Take a listen.
There are going to be opportunities for us this winter to make our team better, and that's what we're going to be focused on. I don't think it's ever right to go into an offseason expecting to make a record-setting signing. You know, that's probably not great expectation management, but we have holes to fill. We know it. We have a very supportive and aggressive ownership group, and we're already starting to connect with other teams and try to look for trade matches. So, you know, I expect we will be active and we'll do everything we can to make our club better.
Now the thing that he's getting into there that he got into faster than I thought he would was the idea of trades.
Yeah.
And I tweeted out my takeaways from that interview that we did with him on Friday. And the number one thing was that they're not making that splash. They're going to spend money on a guy like JT Realmuto to keep him here.
Right.
And they're prepared to do that. And if you're Matt Klentak, you have to do that because you traded away Sixto Sanchez. The minute you trade away one of your top prospects, you're not doing that for a rental player. If you have the opportunity to keep the best catcher in baseball, a guy that's earned that paycheck, you got to give him that paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to keep him around to make yourself look better, right? It's not going to look good for him if they're firing his first hiring as a manager. The same year, they're not re-signing the guy they traded away a top prospect for. So JT Realmuto will be back. They're ready to spend money in that regard. But in terms of the Gerrit Coles of the world, that deal ain't happening. You're not going to have another $330 million type offseason acquisition like you did last year. And then when he shifted into the trade idea a lot faster than I wanted him to, that let me know they're going to be trying to deal some of these players. So when I tweeted it out after the show, people said, well, what the hell do you have to trade? Well, I don't think that they're on the market to be traded, but nobody's untouchable. Alec Bohm, Spencer Howard, Mickey Moniak was, a throw-in in one of the attempts they tried to get earlier in the year for another pitcher that didn't take. They're going to try to trade Cesar Hernandez. They're going to try to get a guy like Mike Alfranco out of here. They're going to try to move those guys, maybe an outfield piece, Nick Williams, whatever it might be, maybe right. Even Adam Haseley, who knows. They're going to try to upgrade in a small way to their rotation with trades. They're going to give Scott Kingery his everyday position at second base. I would say the number one guy I'm looking at that's not going to be back next year is Cesar Hernandez. He has some trade value.
Yeah.
Where a guy like Mike Alfranco has none, although nobody else wants him here anymore. The guy that I see them moving on from is Cesar Hernandez because that really, you get some addition by subtraction in that you get Kingery in the lineup every single day at one position so he doesn't have to worry about where he's going to be. And you also might be able to bring in a back end of the rotation guy, a 4 or 5. Like a Drew Smiley type of guy.
Yeah, and you're still going to have to fill that center field position. You know, I mean, that's still something. I love Corey Dickerson. I hope they bring him back. I don't know if he's an everyday guy for you or anything like that, but there are many holes that they have to fill. And it's funny, right after we got that interview and went to break, we all said that you said it right away. Well, he brought up trades real quick, didn't he?
Yeah.
Didn't really say anything about that free agent market, but brought up trades. So, to me, free agent market, now you go right to pitching. What are they going to do?
Ugh.
Yeah, I mean, Cole Hamels seems to be a given now. You know, a back-end guy, cheap, whatever.
35 years old.
Zach Wheeler. The Mets are fearing that Zach Wheeler is going to get $100 million on the open market.
Uh-huh.
Rumor is Garrett Cole is going to start his bidding at $300 million.
Yeah.
Angels are perceived to be the front runner there. But in 6 years, $300 million for a pitcher approaching 30, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm out on that, too.
$100 million for Zach Wheeler terrifies me because of his injury history. So,
but you're going to have to do something like
yeah.
You have to.
Would you do a deal for Cole Hamels?
Absolutely.
That would pay him around, you know, $17 to $20
million. Absolutely.
A year.
Yep.
So, like a two-year deal?
As long as the expectation is he's, like, your number three.
Now, keep in mind, he's 35.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, as long as he's your
number three. Yeah, yeah. And I think he knows that from his comments.
Yeah, I just don't want Klentak convincing us that he's the number two and we're the other.
No.
Well,
because Arrieta is a four. Okay, I can live with that.
Yeah, but who's your number two?
Maybe it's Zach Wheeler. Maybe it's some, I don't know. That's going to be the tough situation.
So all I'm saying is
Zach Wheeler's second half splits the last 2 years have been phenomenal.
Yeah, he has, but
the injury risk is what scares
me. And don't we have enough of that with the number two we invested in last year over the last 2 years?
And Deshaun Jackson's getting older, so he's an injury risk too.
What the hell?
No, I'm just kidding. Injury risk all over town.
It's just good times, man.
Indeed,
what is it be his mindset? You got a bump shoulder with Ben Simmons? the Rome is burning here.
Yeah, no, injury risk guys, they scare me.
A little bit, I get it. But all I'm saying is, I think a guy like John Middleton has done a lot for his own brand to push the narrative forward about how he's willing to spend money to solve some problems, right? He's not going to do it twice. $300 million-plus contracts for Bryce Harper and fill in the blank, whether it be Garrett Cole or whether it be Anthony Rendon.
Well, there was a rumor out there that Garrett Cole might listen to, like, a two-year offer if it were, say, $85 million.
Oh, yeah, sign that check. Yeah,
I would do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But going 6 years, $300, I'm out.
Well, why would a baseball player do that now when he could just do an opt-out after 2 years signing a long-term deal?
Yeah.
Why? You know what I'm saying?
I mean, just, it's all guaranteed anyway. So yeah,
exactly.
Because I thought I heard from Cole that he wants to, you know, be wherever a team that's possibly in contention.
Yeah. I mean, so it gives you more of that NBA player opt-out control where it's like, oh, you guys suck. I'm out.
Yeah. 2 years. All right. I made my money here. Next. Who's next?
Yeah, he wants to be there, yet he wants to really get away from Houston.
Yeah. Where they're winning every year.
Yeah, they're getting
at least competing.
They're getting their World Series is what they're doing. More than competing. It's a wild thing. I just don't expect the Phillies to roll up that wad of cash and just throw it in free agents' faces this year, kind of like how we thought it was going to go last year. And it did go last year when they had success in bringing in Bryce Harper. But we'll see how it goes. We'll see what the trades are. I think if you're to guarantee one move for this offseason, it's that Cesar Hernandez does not come back next year. Scott Kingery is your everyday second baseman, and they add a back end of the rotation guy with Cesar Hernandez as part of that trade. I think that's the safest bet going forward.
And, you know, a lot of pressure falls on to Spencer Howard now. You talk about not having that number two. And, you know, I was reading some things the other day where it listed who the Phillies' starting five pitchers may be. It didn't list him in there saying, he needs another year of grooming down there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, but maybe desperate times call for desperate measures. And, you know, you throw him in on the back end. Mm-hmm. So maybe your first three are in Nola, Hamels, and Arrieta. And then you hope a Spencer Howard and somebody else can carry the back end.
Let's say after Strasburg. Imagine that.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Mark, though. I think the only big money we're going to see this summer, or this winter, rather, is going to go to JT Realmuto.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the money they'll spend.
I think they know. Like, you make sense, but they can't not spend on a pitcher.
They would look horribly stupid.
They would look cheap to their fan base, and I don't think they want to do that.
How about you revisit? Is Dallas Keuchel upped with Atlanta?
Yeah,
it was a one-year deal, 13 years.
So he's a free agent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be funny?
Hilarious.
Yeah.
But if you somehow were able to pull a Strasburg, Nola, and Hamels top end of your rotation with a Spencer Howard and Arrieta on the back.
Strasburg's going to get that big money.
Yeah, but he might get a shorter-term deal because of his injury history. He's not going to be getting $300 million.
If they want to roll the dice on a short-term deal, the guy that has injury issue, I feel like you're talking about Jake Arrieta all over again, except you're not talking about a guy who's 32.
Yeah, but Strasburg's still dominant.
And he's been broken down. You're also talking about a World Series MVP now.
Yeah, well, I hear you.
In my opinion, runner-up to Julia Rose. But not the point. Not the point. Sorry. No, the other stuff. Right.
But the fan base is not going to take cheapness kindly.
Absolutely not. But I think they are going to spend money. They're just not going to spend Gerrit Cole money. They're not going to spend $300 million. And Strasburg might even be too rich for their blood, especially coming off his World Series performance. So I don't think that big money is going to be out there. For a middle-of-the-road starting pitcher that I think they're going to spend money on, they're not going to make that big Bryce Harper-esque splash when it comes to their rotation. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
I agree with you.
They're not going to have that drawn-out, long, exciting offseason. They'll make moves to make the team better. It'll just be a question when the season starts how much better they'll be than when they closed the door last season. And look, they already in the right direction by bringing in Joe Girardi, who was, if not number one, at most one, or maybe 1A on most people's lists, with him and Joe Maddon being available this past offseason. 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. Coming up, we'll get a little bit more into the Eagles and their game this weekend against the Patriots and the mindset of Tom Brady. Because our friend Dustin just asked us about this. A guy like Matt Klentak, why is he even talking? I want to hear from those guys. Yeah. I want to hear from the decision makers for our teams. If it's John Middleton, if it's Matt Klentak, if it's Andy McPhail, I still consider a sounding board for most. If it's Brett Brown, if it's Elton Brand, I want to hear from guys that are making decisions to see where they're going to put our team, the teams we love so much. And Matt Klentak basically let us know that the direction's not going to be there to go in the $300 million spending spree again. So I want to know what these guys are thinking, what their mindset is. When we talk about mindset, though, of players, we're trying to always question what a guy like Joel Embiid is doing when he's out on the court.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tom Brady did a radio interview in Boston, as he always does, go figure. And he did a kind of let us in that the scars are still very much there from losing to the Eagles 2 years ago in the Super Bowl. Since then, he's won another Super Bowl. His sixth, like, he's doing fine with his team every single year. But he lets you into the mindset of a guy like himself that just never is satisfied unless it's winning. Yeah, I'm sure the Super Bowl losses to the Giants eat away at him.
Sure.
I'm sure the Super Bowl loss, obviously, to the Eagles, as he said yesterday, still eats away at him. But it's something about that mindset that makes a guy like him still strive for excellence. And we'll talk about that coming up in a few here on 97.5, The Fanatic.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5, The Fanatic.
Coming up in about 11 minutes, we'll be joined by Flyers head coach Alain Vigneault.
Vigneault.
Should I go with that, or should I, Eva?
Vigneault.
Should I? What do you think?
I feel you.
Oh. It would be trying to acclimate to my guest, right? Again? That's what it would be, if I go with the I feel you like I did for Mike Scott.
Mm.
But he asked if I felt him, and I said I feel him.
Yeah.
So it was call and response. I felt it was warranted.
You answered it.
I ain't going to go French.
You certainly did.
No.
You answered it.
Yeah.
Every once in a while.
Pourquoi? Pourquoi?
Pourquoi. There we go. Pourquoi would be something different. Yeah, every once in a while, somebody will say, for that, I feel you. Thank you. I feel you too, brother. I feel you too. 610-632-0975. So as we were talking about Tom Brady, by the way, also 930, we'll do Know the Show. Well, we'll reference something that happened earlier in the show. And if you nail it, if you get it right, you'll find yourself at Eagles Patriots this weekend, Sunday, November 17th, all courtesy of the great people of Goldenberg's Peanut Chews. Delicious, chewy, chocolatey, bite-sized pieces loaded with crunchy peanuts. They're taking care of us. They're taking care of our listeners. If you know the show at 9:30, we're going to send you to the Eagles Patriots. Speaking of that quarterback for the Patriots, Tom Brady, did an interview with EEI in Boston where he said that loss to the Eagles still eats away at him. Now, I remember reading stuff from Brett Favre talking about how the loss to the Broncos is something he thinks about more than his Super Bowl victory over the Patriots. Like, that's the mindset you want of any athlete that rolls through your city. And I understand that's not going to be the mindset of everybody. Mm-hmm. Some guys just, but it's no matter what, that's still the mindset you want. Trey, what's the, I think I know the answer to this, but what's the worst loss you ever took in your career?
Actually, when we lost the Super Bowl.
What else could it be, right?
Yeah.
How often do you think about that loss? Does it still creep in there every once in a while?
Yeah, every now and then it creeps back. Like, when you're like, damn, we could have pulled that off. I wish we would have done.
Does that feeling override the feeling you have of your best win? And what was the best win?
I don't know. You know, I really don't think about wins.
That's the mindset. There it is.
I never thought about wins.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never think about wins.
Yeah.
I always think about different matchups, but never a win.
Yeah, what's there to think about when you won?
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah.
Because everything worked out.
Everything was fine. Yeah. There's no second guessing. There's no analysis that goes into it. It's you won. Who cares how it happened? You won. When you lose, it's trying to explain to yourself why it happened, what happened to me, why couldn't I have been better, why couldn't we been better? There's all the questions in the world that surround it.
Mm-hmm. And if you think of all the winning Trey did, like Florida State, I think you said you lost maybe four games your entire career there. Comes to Philadelphia, they turn it around almost immediately after they get Trey. And it's, you know, constant 12, 13 win seasons, all of that, Super Bowls, NFC titles, all of that. So, yeah, I mean, we talk about elite athletes as Trey is. You're all there because you're an elite athlete. Mm-hmm. It's the mindset, you know, tying it all together. We talked about Joel Embiid today, Tom Brady and all. That takes you to that next level.
Yeah, and that's where we're going to revisit before we talk to Elaine Vigneault a little bit here. The main problem you guys have, it seems, with Joel Embiid is that his mindset doesn't appear, at least this season, to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I go more physical.
Right.
I don't think he is in shape to play. And I know they played in Utah, and I know they played in Denver. But they also came back to Philadelphia, and he looks still like a guy that was worn out.
I think we're both right a little bit. I really do.
No,
I think
one is right, one is wrong,
right?
Bob.
I'm not going to disagree with you that there is a shape issue.
Okay.
But I think more so than, I think this is what Trey and I are speaking to, more so than we've ever seen before, there appears to be something going on mentally that is different with Joel Embiid. He doesn't look the same. He doesn't seem to be acting the same on the court. He doesn't seem to be being himself on the basketball court right now.
Ever since the Karl Anthony Towns tussle, right, he has not looked like the same player.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since that moment where they were up 20, he got in a little shoving match with Karl Anthony Towns and been suspended, he has not looked like that same guy. Look, some of the numbers have been good. He dropped 27 and pulled down, 16 rebounds the other night? Like, that looks good, but then you watch the effort towards the end of the game, and you're going, well, wait a minute, is the gas tank empty, or is the mindset not where it needs to be for him to be where he needs to be as an athlete right now?
And yeah, the conditioning needs to be there for him to play with the intensity that we want him to play with. The conditioning needs to be there, but you still just don't see that spark, you know?
Yeah.
It just seems like it's like a glassed over look. And, you know, for us, and I'm not saying every time we stepped out there on the field that we just went, all right, I can't wait to play. Sometimes you have to hit an ammonia cap to get that little glaze out of your eye, you know, just to kind of get it going, you know. But, and that's what I feel with him sometimes. I'm like, dude, does he need an ammonia cap? Hit this ammonia cap, man. Get that glaze out of your eye. Let's go.
But you knew how to get there because you did it predominantly. Almost all the time, you reach that level. When you found yourself not at that level, you found a way to get to that level, as you just said. I don't know if Joel Embiid has reached that level that, all right, when I get on the court, I'm always playing at this level, this 100% go hard level. I think it's a struggle for him to get there, find it, maintain it. And I don't know if he's done it all yet. And this is all conjecture. We're going off of what? How many games has he played this year? Four,
five.
Yeah. So, but it's worth watching.
Yeah, sure. But I'm watching a guy walk off the court last year crying because he didn't advance to the Eastern Conference Finals. They got bounced out in the same situation they got bounced out in last year, which was they got bounced out of the second round of the playoffs. I see a guy that it affects that much where he's literally moved to tears, and not just a little trickle of a single tear, sobbing because he didn't advance. And he looked like a guy throughout the offseason that was putting that work in. And we were joking about the pictures he was posting on social media about, you know, what modeling agency should I sign on with a six-pack abs, Trey.
Mm-hmm.
But watching him play, especially in Utah and Denver, at the end of those games, he was done. He was toast. He looked like he didn't have anything left in his tank. Now, I don't know if that's him just kind of blowing that workload early in the game and he's not being in shape to finish, or a game like he's going against the Hornets, he doesn't feel motivated to play against a lesser opponent, which shouldn't be the case, because if you're Joel Embiid and you haven't played really that much this season anyway, go out there and pad your stats a little bit.
Yeah.
You should at least be motivated for that.
Mm-hmm. It should never be the case. Self-motivation is what the greatest of athletes do.
Yeah, he's an enigma.
If you're looking for motivation, that's hard. You know what I'm saying? Because you got to play with inspiration. That, like, all of the greats have they play with inspiration, right, instead of motivation. Because now you got to keep finding that outside influence to get you going. Mm-hmm. So if he plays an inspired game, he needs to find that whatever it is inside of him to spark something for him to go out there and be the dominant player that we know he can be.
All right, so what do they do tonight against Cleveland? Because you guys, who's going tonight? Bob, you're going?
Yeah.
Bob, all right, you're going there tonight in the Rothman tickets, second row from the court.
We're going with Jim from Bensalem.
You know, Jim from Bensalem.
Yeah,
tickets
he'll
yesterday.
Be there with us, yeah.
I guess that's Sixer. How do they fare tonight against the Clippers?
I don't know. I don't know who's playing. You know, I mean, Al Horford's out. Ben Simmons, I guess, will be another game time decision. From what I've read all through the morning, it looks doubtful that he'll go. I mean, more people think he won't play than he will. So, you know, what is your starting lineup? You have Raul Neto in there. Is Korkmaz going in? You know, is Tobias at the four? Now, where's your rotation? You know, who's coming off the bench? Is your guard combination Raul Neto and Trey Burke? That's probably going to be your point guard situation if Ben doesn't play. So, I don't know. Cleveland's not that good of a team. We know what they are.
Yes.
And, you know, Sixers should win. But, look, if that lineup is out there that I just mentioned, well, then the big boy that we've been talking about, you know, he's got to go out and have his way and carry this team on his shoulders.
How much does Kyle O'Quinn play tonight?
He's got to get you 15, 18 minutes.
Matisse Thybulle, does he get consideration tonight? Burke battle with the Matisse Thybulle, Trey Burke, and Josh Richardson, and all these guys battling for minutes?
Yeah, I guess. You know, and there was quotes I read from Brett earlier this morning. He's saying, you know, look, he's not married to anything right now. It's too early in the season. And so it just goes back to what we had said a couple weeks ago, that it wouldn't surprise us if this is a lot of auditioning that's going on right now. Well, it is. So when you have a couple of guys out, which the Sixers may tonight, does a Matisse Thybulle get a bigger look? Sure, he probably does. Does somebody else get in there that hasn't played a whole lot? Might happen.
All right, so you have tonight a lesser opponent. If Joel Embiid's out there, and he knows Ben's not out there, he knows Al Horford's not out there, albeit a lesser opponent, right? And you even said he's supposed to win. I would hope tonight would be a night where we see a lot about that mindset. We find out a lot about that mindset, because if you're Joel Embiid, you've only played in 5 games this season, and your team has had some struggles. Compared to what we thought, how we thought the Sixers would start the season, they've had their struggles. So Joel Embiid has something to prove tonight, as far as I'm concerned. I don't care if it's the lowly Cavs. Show me you can play a complete game. Now, against Charlotte, he rested some of the regular guys late in the game, which is why it got a lot closer for our comfort. But go out and do what you're supposed to do against a team like the Cleveland Cavaliers tonight. Go out and handle your business.
Get your feet under you and make us stop talking the way we're talking today. I'm serious. Go ahead. You know, get out there and try. I said this last week, I want to see he and Tobias Harris go for between 55 and 60 combined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's kind of what I want to see tonight. I want to see Tobias Harris start getting off a little bit. He's kind of gotten a little past. We haven't talked about him an awful lot. Mm-hmm.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.